Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back in On the Drive, coming up in 15 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine. Plus, we'll continue to give you chances to win $1,000 in our national cash contest, and we'll give you another chance to win a pair of Royals and Yankees tickets. Keep it locked in. Every hour on the 30s, we're giving you a chance to win $1,000 plus Royals and Yankees tickets. Go ahead and keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio. Coming up in a little bit, we'll get back into the Kansas City Royals. But first, the pop quiz presented by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. BK, what movie was it?
It was Twister today. The weather outside, not great.
No.
I have been, like, literally fascinated with watching storm chaser videos. Like, you know how on YouTube you go down this, like, rabbit hole of, like, you click on one thing and then it sends you somewhere else? It's kind of like Wikipedia in that way.
Then it's 4 a.m. and it's bedtime and you're still looking at it. Yeah, it sucks.
I spent 20 minutes yesterday just watching people and their fascination with following tornadoes because I genuinely was trying to understand why anyone... I don't want to be around any person that wants to be outside in this kind of weather. Like, look outside right now. There's somebody that enjoys that it's this way. That person's a psychopath, number one. The person that enjoys how the weather is today in Kansas City is a psychopath. And stay far away from
unless you're a meteorologist or a storm chaser. Like, those are actual jobs. People get paid to do them.
A psychopath. I don't care what your job is. If you look outside today and you get excited, you're a psychopath. I'm sorry. Like, we are designed as people to want it to be 70 degrees and sunny. Like, that's how we are designed. I firmly believe that. If that's not your ideal, if you get excited about this.
I love this stuff. Why do you think they call me the storm machine Sean Levine? I love this stuff.
Then you're a psychopath. I mean, that's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I still love you the same. You're just crazy.
All right.
If you feel that way. Speaking of crazy, we're going to learn more about Sean coming up in Mind of the Machine. That's coming up in 15 minutes. And again, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in national cash contest plus tickets to Royals and Yankees. So we now have the answer to our question. We were curious when they sent down Heath Fehlmeyer if Bubba Starling was coming up. He is not coming up right now. But yesterday, Jeffrey Flanagan, he wrote a story for MLB.com. Listen to what he said. Quote, the good news for fans of Bubba Starling, which might actually be fan. It might just be you. You might be the only person.
I might be his biggest fan, but there are others out there.
Good news for fan of Starling is that there seems to be little doubt that Bubba Starling, who is now 26 years old, will finally make his major league debut sometime this season, perhaps soon. I do want to point this out. If Flanagan is saying perhaps soon, that is not a guess. He knows. Like, someone important with the Royals organization has told him that. I know Flanagan well enough. I think if you've been following the Royals for any amount of time, you know Flanagan is well-sourced. He's plugged in over there. He is not making up probably soon.
You have to admit, it was a bit of a punch to the gut, right, to realize that it wasn't Bubba coming up today?
A little bit. Finishing the thing is, plus he is hitting .355, and the Royals certainly are paying attention to his progress. Dayton Moore has mentioned many times that Starling could handle big league duty defensively. They've been selling us that dream for 3 years, so the fact that he is healthy and hitting are positive signs. The only reason the Royals will be cautious about his call-up is that, unlike Lovelady and Lopez, Starling is out of options. When the Royals pull the trigger on Starling, it pretty much has to be for good. This is what I was saying yesterday. They have no other choice of Bubba Starling. The moment you call Bubba Starling up, he has to be good from day one. I don't know if they can carry Bubba if he's not good for 2 months or 3 months. So either you take an extra 2 weeks, an extra 3 weeks, an extra month to make sure that you're right. And then next year, even if he struggles in September, all right, it's the end of the season. You can kind of justify it a little bit. If you bring Bubba up, let's say you bring him up June 1, and that's when you decide he's on this team. He has to be on this team for the rest of the season, or it's over with the Bubba Starling experiment. The Royals have invested too much in Bubba Starling to give up that quickly. They've given Bubba time after chance after time that they better be 100% right whenever they make the decision to bring up Bubba Starling.
I don't think that they think Bubba Starling at this point is ever going to be a very productive major leaguer. I think that that ship has sailed, even though he's hitting .355 and deserves to come up right now. I think that their plan is to put some butts in seats, which is why I guess I'm a little bit surprised. It seems like everything was kind of lining up. You had the Yankees coming in town. You had the weekend series. If Bubba would have been the guy called up, I think he could have seen an influx of maybe another 5,000 to 7,000 people go out to games. But when it comes to the actual impact that he's going to have on this baseball team, I don't think it's going to be much. I think Bubba Starling's a pretty average baseball player at this point in his career.
This is the thing, though. This is the first time that I would say I was legitimately excited about the conversation.
Yeah.
Because we've had this conversation about Bubba Starling 5, 6, 7 times. But looking at how he's playing, looking at their roster, looking at how poorly Billy Hamilton has played so far, this is the first time that I think it realistically made sense. That I do think we are on bubble watch, so to speak. That every single move they make between now and, I say, the end of the season, we are going to have the conversation of, is this the move to bring up Bubba Starling? Yesterday, talking to Denny Matthews, he says that teams don't call players up, players call players up. If Bubba keeps hitting 355 down in Omaha, he is going to force you at some point to bring him up. If Dayton Moore and the Major League staff already believes that Bubba can handle playing defensively every single day, and seemingly it is his bat, and he can show you for a 80-game sample down in Omaha or a 100-game sample down in Omaha that he can hit 355, at some point you just don't have a choice, and you have to find out whether Bubba can do it or not. So I agree with Flanagan, and Flanagan obviously well-sourced. So when he says there is little doubt that Starling will make his Major League debut sometime this season, perhaps soon, he's not one to make things up. He's hearing this from somebody. It is not a matter of if Bubba's coming up. It's a matter of when.
And he deserves it. I mean, he's got an OBP of just under 500. He's hitting 355. I don't understand what you're talking about, risk versus reward, though. Let's say you bring Bubba up and he sucks. Then that's it. Then the Bubba Starling experiment is over with, and then you go, okay.
I know, but I'm saying is you say that for a team that hasn't spent a single dollar on him. I wouldn't have that mentality if I was the organization that has invested a lot of money into him. You haven't given Bubba Starling a dollar. The Royals have given him $7.5 million, and he has played zero Major League Baseball games for. You've paid him to be the big-time attraction for the Northwest Arkansas and the Omaha Storm Chase. So if I was the team that has invested that much in Bubba Starling, I would not have the mindset that you have.
I'm willing to pay my $12, though, whatever the cheapest Royals ticket it is these days, to go out there and see Bubba Starling. We're talking about two different things. I don't even think the Royals believe that Bubba Starling is going to have a major impact on the Major League squad. I think what they think at this point is that he could put some butts in seats and that his upside is Whit Merrifield. His upside is Hunter Dozier, where you bring him up, all of a sudden, we thought he was a little bit old. We thought that the back end of his career had already began, and he ends up hitting 300 for a portion of a season.
But that's not a good thing, though?
That's a great thing. That's what I'm asking. What do you have to lose by bringing up Bubba and bringing him up sooner rather than later?
Yeah, again, I would say bringing him up too quickly and losing your investment, and just take your time. Like, you seem to be in a rush to get Bubba
up here. Take your time. The guy's been in the system since the Nixon administration.
Yeah, but I guess I don't understand why you would be in a rush to bring Bubba up for 5,000 tickets for one game. Like, Bubba's not a big enough attraction where people are interested in a week or 2 weeks for Bubba Starling. What you're talking about is a single day, maybe a series of Bubba, when you got to think about the next couple of years. It is still within his right that he could be a good player. So they're telling me they think he can play a major league defensive center field, and he's hitting 355 at Triple-A. Not 355 in winter ball, he's hitting 355.
Then he should be up.
I know, so I'm saying is, so what shame is it to come up here? Maybe he hits 270, but he plays a really solid center field, then you've turned him into a really productive major league player. That's not nothing to sneeze at in my mind.
I think, though, it's going to be more than just what you're talking about one game. I think it's until Bubba sucks. I think people are going to be interested in Bubba Starling as much as they're interested in the Kansas City Royals going forward. As soon as he gets called up, I think you're going to see an additional 5,000-7,000 people go out and see him. And if he gets a couple of hits or if he makes a nice play in the field, you're going to see that for at least a few games. That does matter for a team that's not heading anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, a few games. I would say in the very big picture, having an uptick of attendance from 11,000 people to 16,000 people for 4 or 5 games just doesn't hold near the value that you're
placing. I'm with you, but
on
reality check, that's what this season has become. That's what this organization has become right now.
It shouldn't, though. I disagree.
It's a tough pill to swallow.
I disagree, though. To me, it should be about what's in the best interest long-term for players. Rushing Bubba up here to sell tickets for a week is not in the best interest.
Couldn't he do both, though? Couldn't he be the long-term answer, or at least the short-term answer, and sell tickets at the same time?
Yeah, but why not wait until you know if he can be the long-term answer?
How much longer are you going to wait? When is it time? If it's not time when he's hitting 355 and already playing a major league caliber outfield, when is the time? Especially for a team that's already struggling that could use another outfielder. If not now, when?
Yeah, I would say in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Like, you and I just completely different side. I don't know the reason to rush Bubba up here if you're not 100%, especially given the fact of if it doesn't work, you can't send him back.
I guess I just don't see it as rushing Bubba when he's hitting 355 and playing a great outfield and has an OBP of 400 and on base of almost 500. It seems like now would be the time.
There is a poll up on RoyalsReview.com about, are you confident in the direction of the team? There are only 50% of people, at least, that voted in this poll. It's a very scientific poll. 55% of people said they are confident with the direction of the team. 45% of those people said that they approve of the job that Ned Yost is doing. Maybe I'm the only person that feels this way. I don't feel any different about Ned Yost or any different about Dayton Moore than I did at the beginning of the 2016 season, the 2017 season. I still feel very confident in their ability to get this team back up right. I still trust their ability to scout and develop talent. So I'm a little bit surprised that 45% of people think that Ned is doing a good job. If you feel that way, Ned should probably be fired. 45% of people think that Ned doesn't have this team facing in the right direction, or they're not confident in the direction that the team is going. I mean, I'm looking at the guys on their roster. You got Adalberto Mondesi, Hunter Dozier, Jorge Soler. I mean, there's reasons to be optimistic about the team. I was surprised in this poll that people were as down as they are currently on the Royals.
Especially because it's only been a few years since that World Series run. If people were down on either one of them, I suppose Dayton makes a little bit of sense, because Ned's just working with the pieces that he has. And when he had really talented pieces, the team's won a lot of games. When it comes to Dayton, though, Dayton had the Midas touch for like a 3 or 4 or 5 year period, where whether it was a free agent or whether it was the draft or whether it was a trade, whatever move Dayton made, it seemed to work. And doesn't that feel like it's gone away at least the last couple of years? Not that he's a bad GM, not that he ever has to buy a beer in this town again, but he's not the same Dayton, didn't have the same touch that he had maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but it also was easy when you just had a better core of players.
Like, touché.
I mean, the Midas touch is going to work if you have 7 really good players, so then when you bring in an 8th guy like Alex Rios, it works out for you. I mean, the Midas touch was already solidified when, you know, 70% of your team was built the way the Royals are built. Now it's the starting over process. I think we all knew they were going to have to do this. I'm surprised that anybody would be off the plan or lacking confidence in Ned Yost or Dayton Moore. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our National Cash Contest. Plus, we'll give you a chance to win 2 pairs of Royals and Yankees tickets. Keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio. But up next, we go inside the mind of the machine. Next is The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in 15 minutes, we will give you a chance to win a pair of Royals and Yankees tickets and a chance to win $1,000 in the National Cash Contest, so keep it locked in. The Chiefs' biggest question remaining was the topic on NFL.com. We'll tell you what they had the Chiefs' biggest question as. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. But right now, let's go inside the mind of the machine.
Welcome back in, C.BK. Always good to see you. Guys, if you could change one rule in the NFL, what rule would you change?
I think the pass interference is completely broken. I think that too many times we watch games and the plan is, it's not even try to complete the pass, it's just try to get pass interference. There needs to be a radical change to the way the pass interference is called, especially because the volume of passing has just gone up.
I think this is very simple. It's the worst rule in sports. It needs to be changed right now. When an offensive player fumbles the ball goes into the end zone, and whether it goes out of the back of the end zone or to the side and it goes out of bounds, that should not be a turnover.
The reward is the other team gets the football?
It's absurd. It's ridiculous. Every other spot on the field, it goes either to it goes to where the guy fumbles. It's a dead ball, and the offense continues the ball from there. On the goal line, we somehow act like it's different. If you want to make it different, if you feel like you're rewarding the offense too much by just giving them the ball there, then put it back at the 20. That is making it a consequence for the guy that fumbled the football. That's fine. It should not go to the other team. It's ridiculous.
It is an egregious rule.
I actually like that rule, but I'm
really?
Why? What is good about that rule?
I think that every rule we have is in favor of offensive players, that this is the one rule that's in favor of the defense that penalizes the offense for being careless, so we make it seem like it's the worst rule. Think about almost every other rule. Like, pass interference is, they rare, like, them calling defensive pass interference versus offensive pass interference is not even close to proportionate. Forward progress is solely an offensive rule, never helps the defensive team when it comes to forward progress.
Like, fix those rules. This rule shouldn't be a benefactor of the others.
Yeah, I just hold on to the ball. Like they literally are letting you fumble anywhere else on the field. And the rule is you just can't fumble in this space and retain possession. I don't have any problem with it.
That's ridiculous.
They need to get rid of 2 of the preseason games and just have 2. There's no reason for 4 of
those.
That's
a money grab. We all know that.
Tonight is game 4 between the Raptors and the Bucks. C.Dot, do the Raptors kind of feel like the old Marty Schottenheimer Chiefs, where they're really good, but they're not ever going to really win a championship?
Yeah, I just think that football's a lot different than basketball. Like, the Raptors, I mean, their biggest detriment was LeBron James for 7 years. That's the biggest reason why they didn't go. And then this year, I mean, They just have one really, really good player. Then they got two. Siakam's good. Kawhi's a top five player in the league. Siakam's really good. Kyle Lowry goes into the witness protection seemingly every May. Like, I don't know what it is about postseason basketball, but Kyle Lowry just turns to a different player. And that's it. Like, they got six players on their team. I'm not surprised they're not going to the NBA championship.
Yeah, I don't think they're the Chiefs. I do think there is something to be said, though. Like, a lot of teams in the NBA, they either want to be really good or really bad. I think there's some value in just being a really good basketball team. Like, not a great one, not one that's going to go to the finals, but there's value in being what the Hawks were whenever they were winning 50 games every year and making it to the Eastern Conference Finals or the second round of the playoffs. There's value in this year being the Indiana Pacers and winning 48 games. There's value in that. There's value in not being the Royals in 2019 and just being a good baseball team, even if you're not a true contender.
You mentioned the Hawks, guys. We're going to find out next week who the Rookie of the Year and NBA MVP is. But C-Dot, if you were starting a team, would you rather start with Trae Young or Luka Doncic?
I'd probably pick Luka just because he's a little bit bigger, and I think he's probably a little bit more of a traditional. Like, I at least trust Luka's ability to make the guys around him better. I don't know if Trey's just going to be a guy that scores on a lot of – Trey could be a guy that just scores a lot of points on a team that doesn't go anywhere, where I think that Luka's going to have a little bit of a different impact. I'd probably take Luka over Trae Young.
For the record, Trey's averaging 19 and 8 assists per game.
Yeah, Trey had a good year this year. He had a really terrible start to the season, and he pulled it together towards the end. I think Luka's special, man. Like, I think Luka could be one of the 10 best players in the league at some point during his career, maybe one of the 5 best players in the league at some point in his career. He's a special player, so I'd go Luka.
Guys, this morning on Fesco in the Morning, they were talking about how Bob's mom was using her phone on the treadmill at the YMCA, and they threw her out of the YMCA. They tossed her. When's the last time you got thrown out of somewhere? A bar, a movie theater, the YMCA? See that? When's the last time you got tossed from somewhere?
In college, probably like 15 of us snuck into this movie, and one of the attendants came up and asked if we had a ticket. And we did. None of us had a ticket.
You got to go.
And he left to go get the manager. And I mean, we ran about as fast as you can run out of that place. That's the only time I've ever been kicked out of a place.
I got thrown out of a bar in January. Not for anything like significant.
This past January,
like 3 months, 4 months ago.
Wow.
Yeah. I walked out of the side door, and then I was getting ready to go back in the front door to look for my girlfriend because she didn't follow me out the side door. She got lost in the shuffle. And so I was walking in. I told the guy, I'm looking for my girlfriend. I'm just going to be 1 second. And the guy threw me out, like physically threw me out the door. So that was good.
I got thrown out of a bar back in 2003 when KU lost a national championship to Syracuse. I grabbed the microphone from the DJ stand and said a couple of choice words, and they tossed me.
You said in 2003?
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was young. Well, I wasn't like drinking at the bar. I was just upset at the bar that KU had lost to Carmelo Anthony. Nasty weather outside. See that? Do you have a favorite weather-related movie that isn't Twister or Wizard of Oz?
I don't even know if I could name another one.
Perfect Storm? Perfect Storm's a good movie.
Yes, we will accept that, BK. Maybe Day After Tomorrow. Groundhog Day?
Not a good movie.
Would you consider Groundhog Day a weather-related movie?
I think I've only seen one of those movies. I think I've seen Day After Tomorrow. I've never seen Perfect Storm. I've never seen Groundhog's Day before.
Carson Wentz has no limitations in Eagles OTAs. Will they regret getting rid of Big Blank Nick?
No, I don't think they'll regret getting rid of Nick Foles. I don't know if we're 100% certain that Nick Foles isn't a system quarterback. He looked really well whenever Chip Kelly's offense worked the first time. He had 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. He's worked in fake Andy Reid's offense. He's not playing for fake Andy Reid's offense anymore. I don't know if we're 100% certain
that. Andy Reid's offense.
Yeah,
I like that.
I don't know if we're 100% that Nick Foles is really good. I think Carson Wentz is one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the NFL when he's healthy. The problem is he's got to stay healthy. Like, it wasn't too long ago that Eagles fans felt the way that Chiefs fans feel about Mahomes about Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz was going to win MVP prior to his ACL injury. I think Wentz is really good. He's just got to stay healthy.
I heard this on a podcast the other day. I'd be curious about your thoughts. By the way, I think Carson Wentz is going to be really good. I'm not worried about him. They should have done exactly what they did. Let Nick Foles go. Carson Wentz is your guy. Between Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, and Jared Goff, who would you feel most confident in paying between those three?
I'm paying Carson Wentz.
Because all three are going to get paid either prior to this year or after this year.
I would probably feel most confident about paying Jared Goff. Like, I would understand that he has his limitations, but I think he perfectly works for what Sean McVay wants to do offensively, that he might be a system quarterback, but he can run that system. I always make the argument, like, We talk about Drew Brees. Drew Brees was not that good before he met up with Sean Payton. Like, Sean Payton somewhat turned Brees into the quarterback that he is. So if Goff just goes down as Drew Brees and he gets maybe one ring, but he can perfectly run that offense, I don't think that's a bad thing. So out of those two, out of that list and deciding based on health and all that kind of stuff, I wouldn't have any problem paying Goff.
I'd be terrified to pay Goff. I have no idea if that guy's going to be any good when you're paying him $30 million and those around him aren't as good as they are right now.
Guys, Notorious B.I.G. would have been 46 years old today. How many old rap albums do you still listen to today? And what's the best playthrough album, in your opinion?
Like, I mean, I still listen to a lot of older rap albums.
Still listen to Nas?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Nas fan because I'm a huge Jay-Z
Juvie?
Fan.
Still listen to some Juvie? 400 Degrees?
Nah, I was never a huge Southern rap fan, so I've always kind of gravitated more towards the East Coast. I listen to Jay-Z a lot still. I kind of go through my phases with Nas. Like, I listened to Illmatic for probably a week straight, probably earlier this year.
The Black Album, Jay-Z, is a great playthrough album, one through the very end.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider that old, though. I mean, that came out when I was in high school. I mean, Biggie was died for 10 years when Black Album came out. So, I mean, mostly Jay-Z, I would say, the older stuff sometimes. And then sometimes it'll be kind of singles. Like, I still like Mobb Deep. I'm a big UGK fan, so it kind of depends.
Sublime 40 Ounces to Freedom. That's a playthrough CD, in my opinion, also. Let's see what else we got here. Do you guys see that a family rented out an Airbnb and in the pool there was a gator? What do you do if you rent out an Airbnb and you check out the pool and there's an alligator in it?
What kind of question is this, Leaf? what other option do I have? Oh, I'm not going to go outside. No. If I checked into an Airbnb and there was an alligator in the backyard, I want a full refund. I'm not staying here. What kind of question is that?
I'm taking pictures at least, right? You're not just turning around and leaving.
Yeah, you got to take the pictures to be able to get your money back.
Put it on Facebook. Yeah, I guess.
From inside.
You have to have proof. That does make sense. So before you get out of the mind of the machine, we have a bunch of Aladdin tickets we're going to be giving away this week. What is a better Disney movie, Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast?
Beauty and the Beast. I think Beauty and the Beast actually is the second best Disney movie after The Lion King. I think Beauty and the Beast is a fantastic movie.
Are we forgetting Toy Story?
I don't consider Toy Story to be a Disney movie in that same category. Okay. That's a Pixar movie. So that's in the same category as Cars and Monsters, Inc. and Up. I think it's a little bit different than the animated movies from the 90s.
And you've made it out of the mind of the machine.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Plus, we've got not one, but two pairs of tickets to Royals and Yankees. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive. It is now your chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Text the word YOGA, Y-O-G-A, to 72881. That's YOGA. You want Chiefs talk and a chance to win $1,000 in the 30s. There's only one station in Kansas City giving you both weekdays, 7A to 7P. Message and data rates may apply. Your next chance to win is coming up at 4:30, but why not go ahead and win right now? YOGA, Y-O-G-A. Text the word YOGA, Y-O-G-A, to 72881. Your national cash contest word for 330 is YOGA.
And we've got two pairs of Royals tickets to give away right now to caller 6 and 7 at 913-576-7610. If you want to go see the Royals and the Yankees on a 610 Saturday coming up this Saturday, dial us up right now. Caller 6 and 7 at 913-576-7610.
So Michael Lombardi for NFL.com wrote a story where he put together a question for every team remaining in the NFL. Quote, if the Chiefs lose Tyreek Hill for an extended period of time, they must hope that second-round draft pick Mecole Hardman can step up and make an impact down the field. But the greater concern for me is the Chiefs' secondary, where corner is a glaring need. Yes, I know they signed corner Bashaud Breeland from Green Bay, but when has he ever been a solid man-to-man corner? The Chiefs will need to be on the hunt for corners in the next coming month. So I've read a lot of these different stories about cornerbacks and needs for the Kansas City Chiefs. And seemingly every publication that I read is on the same page that their biggest need is corner. It tells me one of two things. Either people on my side are seeing something that the Chiefs are not seeing, and it is a much bigger problem than I think the Chiefs think it is a problem. Because this offseason, they have addressed the needs on the defensive line. They've addressed the needs in linebacker. They have addressed the safety needs. They have not addressed a corner need in my mind. Or it tells me that they are incredibly confident with their corner group, and they know how good their corner group is, and they are not worried about it. But I continue to read these stories, whether it's from Mike Lombardi, whether it's from fill-in-the-blank person that covers the NFL, and they do these puff pieces on what's the biggest need for a team. I continue to see the exact same need for the Kansas City Chiefs. Every single one I've read has their need as a cornerback group.
And it's been a need. And it's been a need since they went to St. Joe last year. And it was a need at the beginning of the draft. And it was a need at the beginning of free agency. Do you think maybe they're just waiting, which is a terrible idea right now, for somebody like Josh Norman to get cut? That's playing with fire. But at this point, doesn't seem like that's their best and only option at the cornerback position.
I mean, it seems like that's their only option. That just seems like a very dangerous proposition.
Not a good idea.
Because I was reading another story from NFL.com, and their question was, is Tyreek Hill going to be available in September, and can Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes weather the storm if he's not there? That's not a big question for me.
Really?
The only thing that that answers to me is, that's the difference potentially between the Chiefs being the number one overall seed in the AFC or the two or the three seed in the AFC. This team can still make the playoffs without Tyreek Hill, and it seemingly comes down to, do you win 12 games? Do you win 11 games? Do you win 10 games? I don't really have the fear of if Tyreek's out for 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 weeks, if they can weather that storm. I just look at their cornerback group, and they appear to be one injury away from being in a very bad situation. Regardless of what you think about their corners, if we're looking at it strictly from a name recognition and what they've accomplished in the league, the Chiefs have bottom five corners in the NFL. I will continue to be surprised and continue to say it. I'm surprised they didn't think it was a bigger issue this offseason.
I'm surprised to hear you say what you just said, because I think that the difference between the Chiefs and the Chargers is paper thin. And don't you think that there's a massive difference where this team is headed, whether they're a one seed, a two seed, a three seed, a four seed, or a five seed? I mean, the difference between the Chiefs and the Chargers last year was essentially game one, when the Chiefs went into Los Angeles and beat the Chargers. Had the Chiefs lost that game, they would have been, what, the five seed and had to take a road path. As good as I think this team is, I still think they need the Arrowhead advantage to get to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, then I would say then you don't think the Chiefs are as good as you sometimes act like you are. I mean, the Patriots could go into Arrowhead and win that. If you think you have the best team in the NFL, to me, there's not much of a difference between being the one seed, the two seed, or the three seed. I'm with you. The road is a little bit tougher. It's not ideal. You certainly would love to be the one seed or the two seed, but I'd much rather this team be healthy. I'd much rather them have Tyreek Hill. I'd much rather them have Sammy Watkins. I'd much rather them be playing as a cohesive unit as the three seed than maybe have some question marks going into it as the one.
Not me, given the choice. Well, given the choice, I'd rather have both, that they're playing cohesive, playing good football, and, of course, have home field advantage. But given the choice, whether the team is playing well or they have home field advantage, I think this team is good. I think they're really talented. I think Pat's the best quarterback in the league. All that being said, I think it's a very small margin for error when you're separating the Chiefs and the Chargers, or the Chiefs and the Patriots, or the Chiefs and maybe two or three other AFC teams, that they're going to need the home field advantage.
I'm just really, really surprised when I'm looking at these teams and I'm looking at all these stories where everyone's need appears to be the exact same thing. Like, it kind of reminds me of if everybody in your friend group tells you that your girlfriend's a little off and you're the one that's like, nah, she's cool. Like, hold on. Your mom said this, your grandma said this, your boy said this.
The girl's
like,
weird, trust me. She's a little weird.
Everybody keeps telling you that your girlfriend appears to be a little bit off. And then down the road, you're like, man, she was right. I can't think of how many times I've brought my mom around a girl and she saw something before I saw it. Like, I don't like X. And I'm like, oh, she's cool. She's cool. No, she wasn't cool. I feel like everybody not associated with the Chiefs continue to tell you how big of a problem their cornerback group is. I continue to be the one telling the text line how big their quarterback group is. Michael Lombardi, a completely neutral observer, does not live here in Kansas City, is telling you how big their cornerback group is. I'm just surprised that it has not been a bigger deal for the Chiefs this offseason.
It's obviously a huge deal, but I think that it could become wide receiver. I agree right now with what Lombardi had to say, that the cornerback position is the biggest glaring hole. But it could be the wide receiver position, depending on what happens with Tyreek Hill and what happens with Sammy Watkins. To me, that's what's scary is if Sammy Watkins gets hurt, which he probably will because he almost always does, and that happens at the same time that Tyreek Hill is suspended, then to me, even more than cornerback, wide receiver becomes your biggest depth issue.
I want to play this for you really quickly because a lot of people on the text line are asking about Gerald McCoy. Gerald McCoy just got cut from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It looks like he's available on the market. He's really being he's really heavily sought after by teams in the AFC. Here's what Ian Rappaport had to say about it.
Their former All-Pro defensive tackle, the Bucs have decided to release Gerald McCoy after several star-studded seasons, almost a decade with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he was one of the big-time faces of this franchise and of this community. They informed him that they are officially releasing him. Gerald McCoy now officially a free agent.
So to kind of summarize what happened with Gerald McCoy, if you haven't been following, and I completely understand why you haven't been following it. He was due $13 million. It was a very similar situation to Justin Houston. The Buccaneers were not going to pay him $13 million, and no team in the NFL was going to trade for the $13 million contract. So he and the Bucs agreed to mutually part ways, or you can call it that. He got fired from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It will appear the three teams who have the most interest in Gerald McCoy are the Cleveland Browns, the New England Patriots, and the Los Angeles Chargers. I would certainly love for the Chiefs to make a move for Gerald McCoy. I think he would make a lot of sense in Kansas City, especially given how good of a player that I think he is. I could also see the Colts making a move on him. I just think the Chiefs have spent far too many resources this offseason on defensive line to go ahead and spend one more on Gerald McCoy. He's not going to come cheap. We talk about supply and demand. If you got the Browns involved, the Patriots involved, the Chargers involved, maybe the Colts involved, he's not taking a one-year, $4 million heavy incentive proven deal. Someone's going to sign him to a two-year, $12 million deal, give him a chance to get some of that money back. I don't know if he's in the Chiefs' price range.
You could really kill two birds with one stone, though, if one of those teams ends up signing him, because you would add him to the Chiefs and take him off of a team like the Patriots or the Chargers or Cleveland or Indy, which I think are the Chiefs' closest competition in the AFC. It's a hell of a scary thought to think that Gerald McCoy might go to the Chargers or the Patriots, a team that I think is right already in the Chiefs' rearview mirror.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win in our Pack-A-Day giveaway as we give you a chance to win an Adalberto Mondesi autograph rookie card. Keep it locked in right here. Plus, I think I found the single worst headline in the history of sports. I'll read it to you coming up as the drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Sometimes I really think that whenever I bring up the Chiefs cornerback situation, it's a lot like the Emperor's New Clothes. The BK, you were here. You remember whenever the text line was trying to tell us how pass rush wasn't important, how they didn't need to go get a pass rush, but then they got Frank Clark and then pass rush became super important.
And you pay for the corners. That was what everybody told us.
Yeah, because when I kept saying, man, they don't have anybody that can run. The moment they got rid of Dee Ford and Justin Houston, I kept saying they only have one pass rusher. Man, pass rush isn't that important. I mean, look at the Patriots. Then they go get Frank Clark and give him $100 million in 60 guaranteed. Pass rush is magically important. I'm sitting here and I'm looking at every single person that writes about the NFL that is writing about what a team's biggest need is. Everybody is writing the same thing. I haven't seen one. BK, you follow this. Sean, you follow this. I haven't seen one person say offensive line is a huge need for the Chiefs.
There was actually one earlier today.
I haven't seen one that said running back is a huge for need for the Chiefs.
I just thought it was funny.
I haven't seen it, though. I haven't seen the one that said running back is a need for the Chiefs. I haven't really seen one that said wide receiver is a huge need for the Chiefs. Are there some questions because of Tyreek Hill? Yeah. I have not seen one Chiefs should go trade to go get another wide receiver. I have not seen that. I can show you right now. I could find 10 separate articles from legitimate NFL websites to tell you cornerback is the biggest need for the Chiefs. So either they know something you don't know, or the Chiefs have some secret weapon hidden and that Charvarius Ward or Rashad Fenton are going to be way better than people are anticipating.
It's not that. It's that they're really good, or at least good, at almost every other group. You mentioned the running backs. They've got Damian Williams. You mentioned the offensive line. They're fine. They kept Patton one piece last year. They've got the best quarterback. They've got good wide receivers. They've got the best tight end. Defensively, they add a lot of pieces to almost every level. That's what we're talking about here, is cornerback is obviously the weakest part of this football team. Everybody knows it. Everybody sees it.
I don't know if that's the case, honestly.
Really?
I'm sitting here looking
besides
at the text
line. Besides the Chiefs, who doesn't know that?
I'm sitting here looking at the text line, and I think right now if we did a poll, is cornerback an issue for the Chiefs? I don't think it's overwhelming yes or no.
It's going to be 80% of people are going to say absolutely yes. Everybody knows the Chiefs' cornerback issue is terrible.
Let's do it then. Let's do a poll.
Let's put this up.
How do we want to phrase it? Is cornerback the biggest issue for the Chiefs?
Not even biggest issue. Would you consider their cornerbacks to be an issue?
It's going
to
be 80-20. People are going to say yes, okay. Guaranteed.
I tend to agree.
I don't think so. I don't. I mean, I obviously could be wrong. I mean, I'm betting on Twitter votes, so I mean, we all know how positive that could be. I don't think people think their cornerback group is nearly the problem that I think.
Have you talked to anybody that knows what they're talking about that said, yeah, the cornerbacks are all right, besides the Chiefs themselves?
I was talking to people who told me pass rush wasn't that big of a deal, and then they went out and got Frank Clark. The same people that are telling me that their cornerback group I think is fine, they're the same people that literally right before you got here, when I was coming on this show every day and BK was here and I was saying how important pass rush was telling me, look, the Patriots don't do this. The Patriots scheme pass rush, and then they went and traded for Frank Clark. When me and BK were sitting here talking about trade for Frank Clark for 2 months before that. 2 months. Am I lying, BK?
You ain't lying. I was bringing up Frank Clark and Devion Clowney.
For 2 months, we were saying,
DeMarcus Lawrence.
For 2 months, we were saying, go trade for somebody like Frank Clark. And the text line was saying we were beating a dead horse and how dumb we were for even bringing this up and having this conversation. Then they do it, and magically, pass rush is important again. Having good corners seems very important to me, but no one agrees with me, so what does it matter? No one, what does it matter? All right, so let's get into this. So I don't even know how this got on my timeline today because I do not follow the Wall Street Journal, and I'm very upset that the internet would even bring this kind of foolishness into my mental.
Damn internet.
Listen to the headline today for the Wall Street Journal. the Golden State Warriors would not be a dynasty without Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, and Kevin Durant. That's the whole damn team. Who else is on the team? Can you name anybody else on the team? The Warriors would not be a dynasty without arguably the greatest point guard of all time and greatest shooter of all time, Klay Thompson, who's one of the 10 best shooters all time, in my opinion. Draymond Green, who might be the, he might be the Dennis Rodman, Bill Laimbeer of this era. Andre Iguodala, one of the best six-man, seventh-man to come off a bench. And Kevin Durant, a top-five offensive player all time. You think?
Can you imagine this headline, the Kansas City Star? Like, the Chiefs wouldn't be as good if they didn't have Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu, and a running back.
What?
Yeah, like Chiefs offense would not be dynamic without Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid. Yes, I agree with you. I'm 100% on your side. That would not be the case. That's the worst headline that I've ever read in my entire life. I was thinking this, too, yesterday when I was watching the game and I was watching the Warriors close things out, and we are 9 days away from the NBA Finals. So tonight, if the Bucks take care of business and, you know, they take care of business, they're quickly in five games, we're going to have a long time until the NBA Finals to kind of prepare for that.
They got
to
fix this. This shouldn't be able to happen. Like, you get a couple of days off. Whenever the Eastern and Western Conference series come to an end, you get 2 days off after that. Let's go to the NBA Finals.
I'm with you.
Seems fair.
No, I'm 100% with you.
9 days is a little bit long. I agree.
Who do you think the Chiefs' Draymond Green is? I don't know if the Chiefs have one. Like, I was thinking this when the Patriots, they just signed Julian Edelman to a contract. Like, I would consider Julian Edelman to be the Chiefs' version of Draymond Green. Like, or the Patriots' version of Draymond Green. Like, Draymond, I'm just watching him yesterday. No one thinks that Draymond's a top 10 basketball player in the world. No one thinks he's probably a top 15 player in the world. But just Draymond, when it comes time for postseason, when you need somebody to make a bucket, Draymond can get that for you. When you need somebody to guard your other team's best player, Draymond can do that. If you need somebody to get a critical rebound, a block, a steal, an energy bucket, he's just your gritty, grimy, do-everything kind of player. Not a star. He's not Steph. He's not Klay. He's not Kevin Durant. But the Golden State wheel does not work without the toughness and intensity of Draymond Green. Who's that person for the Chiefs? I don't know if they have that player.
I'd say Eric Berry was, maybe, the closest thing to it. I think Travis Kelce's probably too big of a star, so maybe it's a new guy. Maybe Tyrann Mathieu. If you're talking about a player that's not necessarily a superstar, that's the glue that keeps the team together, but is a really important part of the team, I guess I'm going to have to go with Tyrann Mathieu on the defensive side of the ball, if not Travis Kelce.
Can I give you a nominee?
Yeah.
Sammy Watkins?
But to me, though, Kelce, I guess really quick, though, I don't know if Kelce would count as, like, you think Kelce could be a Hall of Fame tight end? Like, I think Kelsey's the
Draymond's
best player.
I was going to say, I think Draymond Green can end up in the Hall of Fame, too. But then again, I put everybody in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, Draymond Green's averaging like less than 10 points a game for his career.
I'll be surprised if he's not a Hall of Famer. I think he's absolutely going in.
A lot of winning.
Yeah, it's not hard to get into the Basketball Hall of Fame, first of all. And second of all, he was one of the three most important players on arguably the best team of a generation. I mean, Draymond Green's going to the Hall of Fame.
But we agree, I guess, in this context, the difference between Draymond and Travis Kelce is Travis Kelce is a Hall of Fame player. Draymond Green is on a Hall of Fame team.
That's
like,
probably
like,
fair.
Like Draymond Green for his career is averaging 9 points and 7 rebounds for like his career. 9 points and seven. This year, Draymond Green averaged 7 and 7 this year.
Yeah, if he played on a different team, we're not even having this conversation, but he doesn't. He plays on Golden State.
I'm with you. So maybe he gets in because of that, but I'm saying is the difference in Kelce is Kelce is playing at an elite Hall of Fame level. Draymond Green is not. But yesterday in the postseason, the Warriors were the first team in the history of the NBA to have two players have a triple-double. Draymond is as important or as important to the cog of that machine as anybody. I just don't know if the Chiefs have that kind of player. They either have stars at the high end of it. Like Mahomes is a star. Tyreek Hill is a star. Kelce, I think, is a star. Chris Jones is a star. Or they just have a pretty big seismic gap, I think, between the guys who we think are Pro Bowl, All-Pro kind of players, and then that next group, that next tier of people.
Did you say Sammy Watkins? And did you
I,
mean
I
to
did.
Say Sammy
we
Watkins?
Just, like, we just drove right through
yeah,
that.
Is that what you meant to say?
I was just trying to answer the question. My bad.
So the reason why I say Sammy Watkins is because I was looking at this the other day. Do you guys remember what Sammy did in the playoffs?
Yeah.
He was really good. 6 receptions for 65 yards against the Colts. And then in the biggest game of the season for the Chiefs, when they needed a play, it was Sammy Watkins who was making those plays. The biggest play of the game in the fourth quarter, when they had to have something and they needed that big thing going, it was Sammy Watkins who was making those plays, not Tyreek Hill in that game. So we don't have a big sample size of this, but in the two games that really mattered for the Chiefs last year, Sammy Watkins actually came up really big. So it's absolutely in play that he's that player.
A lot of people on the text line are saying that Anthony Sherman is maybe the Draymond
Gets Green. Gets in on like sausage. Five plays a game.
The sausage.
And, I mean, if your Draymond Green is Anthony Sherman and the Patriots is Julian Edelman, I mean, I think we see why the Patriots continue to win all these Super Bowls.
I know who our Steph is. It's Pat. I know who our Clay is. It's Travis Kelce. It's tougher to figure out who our Draymond Green is.
I'm with you. Like, when I was really sitting at home and I was thinking of this, it was easy to think of the high-end comparison. Yeah. I can tell you who their Kevin Durant is. I can tell you who their Steph is. I can tell you who their Andre Iguodala is. I don't know who their Draymond is. I don't know if they have the Draymond. Maybe Tyrann Mathieu turns into that your gritty, do-everything kind of player. Maybe that turns into a guy like Anthony Hitchens, someone like that. I just don't know if it's as defined on their team as maybe some other teams. Coming up in a little bit, we have an argument that maybe is the hottest take I've ever given, but I firmly believe this to be the case. But first, let's give you a chance to win a prize.
It's time for the Drives Pack-A-Day giveaway, brought to you by the Baseball Card Store, located on West 87th Street in Overland Park.
Every day here on The Drive, you have a chance to win a 2019 Topps Royals team set, along with a vintage unopened pack of baseball cards. Each daily winner is then entered for a chance to win a signed Adalberto Mondesi rookie card, and everybody who wins this summer goes into the drawing for the grand prize of an Adalberto Mondesi signed baseball bat. All of this thanks to our friends at the Baseball Card Store. All you got to do is get this trivia question correct. In 1985, the Cardinals traded an outfielder to the Royals. That outfielder then went on to become the first player in MLB history to be traded from a team to play against that other team in the World Series. Who was that player? I'll give it to you one more time. Player traded from the Cards to the Royals in 1985. He then went on to play against the team that traded him in the first place. The first time it ever happened. Who was that player? You can get this question correct. Be caller number 6 at 913-576-7610. You can win.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll give you another chance to win $1,000. We'll give you another chance to win Royals and Yankees tickets. But first, we argue about the weather. Next is The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.